on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Good morning. Welcome aboard our first cast this morning from the Hunter Valley as all of the gun bass anglers gather around the fire getting ready to hit the water and take on those bronze battlers, the Aussie Bass, in the latest ABT tournament. We'll catch up with tournament director James Reid next. Made it down to minus 12 at Perisher, but believe it or not, the bass fishing is hotting up. James Reid is the ABT tournament director for the big event at beautiful Lake St. Clair this weekend up in the Hunter Valley, and joins us no doubt from around the fire, just getting the old digits defrosted. So James, they're all getting, I guess, rolling out of their tents now, getting ready to hit the water, are they?
Yes, they are, and it's a pretty crisp morning this morning, so I'll be guessing we'll seeing a few of them emerge with big jackets and Ugg boots on today.
That's the way. But a lot of people listening to this, as you said to me off the air, would think bass definitely a summer night species taking off the top, but it's different in the impoundments, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, it's definitely a lot different to your wild fisheries.
Take us through those great fisheries up in the Hunter too, St. Clair and Glenbourne. Why is this time a good time?
Well, I think because they don't have a big food source in the dams. They like to concentrate on your little firetail gudgeons and smelt and things like that, which tend to, I'm pretty sure they spawn and start breeding this time of year. So that's why you tend to find them right up in the shallows on the weed edges and that, feeding on all your small smelt, gudgeons and things like that, whereas opposed to the summer, you get your more, like you said, your top water cicada and bugs and little lizards and things like that swimming around in the water.
I just think it's better fun in the winter too, because they really do school up as well. It's interesting, in summertime, it gets quite hot up there at St. Clair and you've got to wait oftentimes till 10 o'clock at night before the evening rise, whereas the action's a bit more reliable in the depths of winter, isn't it?
It definitely is. It definitely can be a lot hotter, as we would say, as terms to biting. You'll find, like you said, you'll find patches of schools where you can go out and catch. You know, like, you'll get your limit quite quickly and proceed to upgrade throughout the morning. And as the sun lifts, they tend to go a little bit deeper and a little bit harder to catch. But with these the sun coming up later, I think that the fish, as you said, they bite really well in those early hours of the morning.
You've got the best lure fishermen in the land there, in the best equipped boats with the best gear. Some of them also will throw a sinking line or an intermediate line with a fly too,
yes,
just to switch it up a bit and show them something they haven't seen. That's a secret tactic, isn't it? But what are some of the tactics they'll be using today, this morning, when they hit the water for this big money tournament?
I'm thinking small plastics, so things like Kytec Easy Shiners and the 2-inch, cut down slider grubs. You'll still have a few guys throwing your skirter jigs and things like that they do through the hotter spring and summer months. But I've heard that there are still some fish biting on that spring pattern on the skirter jigs, which they use a lot in the States. But I do think that the tournament's going to be won using your small plastic techniques.
Now, fish of over 60 centimetres are in there, have come out of there. I know a fly fisher who caught one on a summer's night over the weed beds. That was a pretty meritorious fight. So it's there are some lunker bass in there. What do you think we'll see this weekend at St. Clair?
I'm thinking, I'm hoping we're going to... The anglers will catch an average of that 800 grams to maybe 1.1 that can be in there. But I think we're going to see a lot of fish around that 700 gram mark. Anyone that can find those bigger fish of, you know, that 1.1 to 1.3 area are going to do really well.
And they fight so hard, don't they, James?
They do. They definitely do. And the guys will be using very light lines, anywhere from like 4 to 8 pounds. So a kilo plus fish on that light gear and light rods is definitely going to be a good challenge for the anglers.
We're speaking with James Reid at the Australian Bass Tournament at Lake St Clair this morning. He's shivering by the fire. They're just about to fire the gun or shoot the hooter or whatever they do to hit the water with all the bass boats ready to go in this big tournament, which is very exciting form of fishing, if you like that sort of thing. I'm just thinking about the whole fishery too. It is a put and take fishery, but these tournaments are very much more about put than take, aren't they?
Correct. Definitely. With the bass anglers, it's definitely a lot more of a catch and release mentality with the anglers these days, which is great for these fisheries, because whatever fish go in there are usually still in there with years to come, and you get great numbers, which means a great day on the water.
And the bass live for a long time, don't they?
They can do, yes. Some of our the info fish records and things like that show that there's been bass that have been tagged for 20 years.
Yeah, fantastic. It's a wonderful resource, as Lee Wolf said. Why should you burn your golf balls after a game of golf? Leave
exactly.
them there. Do they take well to this sort of catch-and-release style in the tournaments, with weigh-ins and things?
They do, and that's another reason why we run our bass tournaments in the cooler months. So with the live wells, they suck the water up off the, the top sort of 30 centimetres of water. So in the summer when the water's quite warm, sucking in that warmer water into the live wells doesn't do well for the fish. So when the water's cold, it takes that top layer of water off for the live wells, and the fish handle it really, really well.
That's great. And can people come along for the weigh-in if you live at Muswellbrook or Singleton or Maitland, one of the close Hunter Valley towns?
Most definitely. We're always welcoming in spectators and people to come down and watch the weigh-ins. It's a great thing for the kids. The anglers are always keen to let the kids go and let their fish go and things like that. So it's always good to see kids engaging with the anglers. And as I like to say, the kids are the future anglers. So keep them interested and get them tackle boxes and not Xboxes.
Go, James. Where and when for the weigh-ins at St Clair this weekend?
It'll be, at St Clair Dam. The weigh-ins will be down on the foreshore of the bank, just down from the toilet, the main toilet block. We'll be doing the weigh-ins from 2 o'clock. There'll be three flights, so the boats will come in at 2, 2.20 and 2.40. So the weigh-in, if you're there from 1.30 onwards, it'll be a great time to come down and have a look. And one thing about the tournaments we're running this year is we're running a special permit. So as everybody that goes bass fishing knows, that it's a two-fish limit per person. But in our tournaments, what we're running a shared weight system. So the boater, non-boater, their fish are combined. And with the special permit that we hold at the moment, they're allowed to weigh in five fish combined each session.
Oh, that's great. What sort of combined weights could we get? I mean, what could win?
The guys are all predicting if you can come in with 4 kilos a session, you'll do really well. But as we said, there is those really big fish in there. So anyone that's got one of those kicker fish and comes in with, anywhere from a 4.2 to maybe a 5.5 kilo bag, those guys are going to be the ones to watch.
And they all get to swim and fight another day after the weigh-in.
Correct, and that's the beauty of these tournaments. It's a catch-and-release tournament, so for whatever fish we take out and weigh in, they go back in there. So people that want to go down to the dam, such as Glenbourne and St Clair, all the fish that we catch this weekend, we'll be back in there for them next weekend to try and catch again.
Now, I don't want to put any pressure on him this morning, but Nick Price from Aberdeen, local lad, the locals are cheering him on, and he knows the water. He will be hard to beat.
Yeah, I'd say so. He's been spending a lot of time out at St Clair practice fishing because he is a local to Glenbourne Dam, and in the last tournament we had there only a couple of weeks ago, he double donutted and didn't weigh in a fish. So he's really working hard to make sure that he doesn't repeat that performance from a couple of weeks ago.
Right. Oh, you can't keep a champion down.
No, that's it. You can't keep a good man like Nick Price down. He's definitely a gentleman of the sport, and I really hope he does well.
Yes, my good friend Mike Pritchard there at ABC Upper Hunter said, Nick Price, he's the one to follow. He's the gun.
another one to watch, another one that I'm not going to rule out is a young guy, Luke Draper. He's not even 20 years old yet, I don't think, and he's leading the Angler of the Year race at the moment.
Oh, good luck to all of them. It's a wonderful place. As you say, they're all rugged up this morning and around the fire, and it's about the camaraderie. I mean, it's great to win, but it's more about just getting together with a group of just fanatical fisher folk, isn't it?
And that's the beauty of the fishing tournaments. But, you know, I've got a lot of mates and not a lot of them like to fish. So coming away and doing these tournaments, you make a great group of mates all around the country that are all interested in the one thing that you're interested in. And you could go from Mackay to Tasmania with these guys at fish, and you can stay at their places and fish all around the country for all our great Australian native sports fish.
All right. Well, I'll let you get back to it. I know they'll be trying to fire up the engines and get out there with the sunrises around about, 2 minutes to seven or something around there. So there's a bit of a low light for them to exploit this morning. That might be when they get the lunker.
That's it. Hopefully they get into them.
All right. Take care. Layer up. James Reid from the Australian Bass Tournament at St Clair in the Hunter Valley. Thanks for joining us on the program.
No worries. Thanks, Scott.
There's a singing single, a sell in celebrity. There's a rage in marriage. There's a grave in gravy. There's a dump in dumpling, a liver in delivery. There's a pay in every patriot, and a spit in hospitality. But there's a tuna, there's a tuna. There's a tuna in every opportunity. Trunk light or Abercore, guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity.
All right.
If you take the two A's out of aardvark, if you take the two L's out of llama, if you take the two O's out of ooze, put them all together, they spell
hello.
But there's a tuna. There's a tuna in every opportunity. Trunk light or Abercore, guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity. There's a dye in every diet. There's a gas in gastrointestinal tract. There's a man in mental illness, and ovary and overreact. Yes, there's a tuna. There's a tuna. There's a tuna in every opportunity. Trunk light or Abercore, guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity. Oh, water, oil, or ahi, you should give it a try. The tuna of opportunity.
Playing your tuna there, Roden Woodhams. Good morning.
Good morning, Scotty. How are you today, my friend?
Yeah, that's your theme song. You always come on after that. And bluefin tuna, have you had your ear to the grapevine?
I've had my ear to the grapevine, and it sounds like that if you're in Tasmania, Victoria, or down around Portland, that you've got a much greater chance of coming across one, because the cool water that they require hasn't quite snuck around the corner there at Gabo Island yet. Scott, I had a bit of a look at the charts this morning. There's some 9 to 12 degree water pushing around, but unfortunately between Gabo and Bermagui, it's still in that, you know, that 19 to 20 range, and we really, really needed to kick back and sort of sit somewhere between, I don't know, where perfect conditions would be around that 14 to 18 mark, although we have caught them up here in slightly warmer water than that, but we need a reason for them to come around the corner first. So hopefully, over the next couple of weeks, we've got a really nasty, nasty bit of southeasterly weather going to come in and drop a lot of rain on the coast, apparently, over the next 4 to 5 days. We've got a patch of 7 metre water, 300 nautical miles due east and south of us here. So let's hope, Scott, that the weather kicks up some cold stuff, and around the corner comes one of those 150-kilogram barrels with your name written on it.
It wasn't a bad season for them last year. They actually got all the way up to Sydney and beyond, didn't they? And stayed for a long time too in the north.
Well, they were very, very strange and patchy. Now, as you well know, we got them. We found them first, and they were here for a couple of weeks, and then they disappeared again. But it's intuitive fishing at the moment, Scott. We just can't get out in the water. You know, that's been the biggest problem probably since the start of the year. The weather has been completely against us at all levels, and you can't find them unless you're fishing for them. it's okay to depend on all the reports coming in from the longliners, but unfortunately for us, most of those boats are well outside our range as trailer bait or small boat operators. And even if you do have, excuse me, Scotty, something with the reins, let's just say that you're in a 75-foot warren like Little Audrey, and you can push out 120, 180 nautical miles. Even in a 75-foot boat, you do not want to be out there in 40 to 60 knots with 7 metres of sea on it. It's just nothing can be achieved. So it's that same old problem all the time. We just wait for all of those beautiful factors to come together, and then we might get a look. But even if we do get a look, it might be very short. So I think there's going to be a lot of travel this year, Scott. I think a lot of people will be pushing down to Victoria, to Apollo Bay, running towards Portland, Port Perry, heading across to the South Australian border. Of note, though, earlier on this year, the South Australian boys had their tuna tag and release comp down there, which they do on 6 kilo line, Scott.
That's very, very light string for those monsters.
Well, the average size of the fish is like 3 to 6 kilos, so they fish fairly light.
Oh, I see. Right. So these are the ones that they corral up for the fattening trade.
Correct. This is all the Port Lincoln boys. This is all the blokes that I have various opinions about. But anyway, apparently, I was reading the other day, they have tags in something like 561 fish. So small fish recruitment seems to be there. And this is quite remarkable considering we had a politician, and I will name him because I don't care, but during the Howard years, they deemed it appropriate to sell just under $4 billion worth of bluefin to the Japanese so that we could hold hands over something else, which is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. And, 200 Japanese longliners put 1.25 million hooks a month in the water, and that's where the bluefin went first time. And now we're in that quandary again of the fish starting to make a comeback, and people are starting to ask questions about the number of people that keep 150 to 170 kilogram mature 20 to 28 year old breeding fish. I'm starting to question it too. I think that we need to start to adjust our point of view, take more photos, and stop stringing up giant bluefin. And I think I would be remiss in not suggesting that it's time for us to stop stringing up broadbill swordfish as well, fellas. It's now getting to the point, you run your rule of thumb over the fish that have come out of the Victorian fishery, the Tasmanian fishery, talking about broadbills there, and the size of the bluefin that are being kept. Well, I think I don't know. I wouldn't keep one, Scott. That's just me personally. I knocked up, if I got one over 100 kilos, if it was in good condition and releasable, it would be released instantaneously. And I would probably do the same with the broadbill. So there's some things to think about there, guys, when you're out there nailing them. If you've got 380 to 120 kilogram tuna up on lures in the spread, you've hooked them all. What really do you want with 336 kilograms of bluefin?
How many are you allowed to keep?
I think we're allowed 2 per boat. I'm not right up with regulations. It used to be 1 per angular, Scott, but I think it's 2 per boat now for that particular reason.
Although when you talk about the window of opportunity and the scarcity of the fish, obviously that there are more small boat anglers out there now, but gee, they're not really putting a big dent in them, and the commercial take would have to probably be the thing that would take more, but that it all counts, doesn't it?
Well, Scott, at one particular point there last season at Port Ferry, 14 fish over 120 were boated, decked and killed in 3 days. Right, at one stage there, I think I saw a drone shot of the Portland boat ramp. There were 227 boats there. And that's an intense amount of pressure on the fish. If you've got, let's just round it down to 200 boats fishing with 6 lures or 5 lures, let's call it 5. You're talking about 1,000 lures in the water, ploughing the water. And that's broad scale. It's like broad scale agriculture. You line those boats up side by side, Scott, and you've literally got a wall of lures, seriously, 6 kilometres wide.
Yeah, that is probably making a dent in it. Yeah. Look, happy conservation news, a beautiful song has been sung and heard that people thought didn't exist.
Gee, Scott, you know, just the single greatest heartbreak of my entire life was listening to the soul Pacific humpback sing himself to death over 21 years. And those of you who want to listen to that, that's available online. I suggest that every human being with a heart go and listen to it. It'll tell you a lot about yourself and a lot about what we do as hominids. But this week, the Northern Right Whale song has been recorded. Now, Northern Right Whales, and as only a human would name an animal like this, so the right whales are called the right whales because when you shot a harpoon into them and blew their brains up, they floated and didn't sink, Scott. So clearly they're the right whales to hunt, you know. So during the 1800s, 1900s, we absolutely decimated the southern right whale population, and I had the great pleasure last year of sitting with two 80-foot females travelling up the coast in about 30 foot of water off Botany. And they are remarkable. They're everything that a humpback isn't. They don't jump around. They don't splash. They don't make a lot of noise. But gee, when they just appear under your boat and they're 80 foot long and 18 feet across the shoulders, they're just magnificent. So the northern right whale was hunted almost to extinction. And this week we have some researchers that have been listening to what they believe are 30 individuals. An amazing comeback. If this is indeed true, this could be one of the great comebacks. And amazing animals. So, folks, if you're an inshore fisherman in Australia, just keep your eyes open if you're out and about because they like to hug the coast very closely when they travel up. Amazing animals.
And you can tell from their blow, too. I was told by one of the orca people, the cetacean conservation group, that if you see a blow like a tree, because the humpbacks have the two vents on the top and they have sort of a V-shaped blow come out, but the southern right and the right whales have a straight one hole, basically, and it comes up like a mushroom, like a tree, like a mushroom cloud, and that's a dead giveaway for identifying them too, I'm told. Rode?
You know what else, Scott?
What?
When they do that at night, when you're in your boat having a snapper fish, it frightens the bejesus out of you. It is a very loud noise when it happens 25, 30 metres away from you. Nothing quiet about it.
Great stuff. Hey, Roden, we're going to leave it there again. Good to talk to you about the offshore scene. We'll catch you next time on The Big Fish.
All right, and if anyone out there finds a bluefin, let us know, Scotty, please.
All right. Talk to you next time.
See ya.
Wipe the sleep from my eyes. It's a weekend, I can drop my disguise. Better get it moving before the sunrise. Wonder what's on the missus' lips. I bring my flathead, I wish. I better tune in to the big fish. Waiting the line's no good for my babe, but I got a feeling change my day. Wipe the sleep from my eyes. It's a weekend, I can drop my disguise. Better get it moving before the sunrise. Wonder what's on the missus' lips. I bring my flathead, I wish. Better tune in to the big fish. Yeah, I better tune in to the big fish. Yeah, I better tune in to the big fish.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Look, I know when you look out your window there at Fingal Bay and look out, it looks like a big ocean, but you reckon there's plenty that you can run into.
Oh, I'm still having flashbacks of my experience last week when I went within 2 metres of a whale. It was interesting, Scott, because I heard reports through the week of people who are purposefully motoring as close to whales as they possibly can. Well, that's craziness. Because you're interfering with the whale, and it's just keep your distance. I mean, that's what you do, if you can. However, in my case, I had no choice. I'm zooming along at a fair rate of knots, and then beside the tinny, beside Stinkpot, this massive creature emerged from the sea. Now, I had no chance to avoid that creature, and that creature had no chance to avoid me. So it was just sheer luck that we didn't collide. And who knows what the outcome could have been. I mean, I mentioned to you not so long ago about a friend of mine, Mullet Connell, and Mullet coming back on GPS mark on a moonless night. Well, it wouldn't have mattered whether it was a moon or not, but he just went bang straight into a whale and broke his hip, and he was in all sorts of trouble. I mean, there are so many whales out there. It's the most I've ever seen. I think, I don't know what research says, but there's plenty out there, and they're all heading north.
At the moment, there are something to really factor in if you're motoring along. There are other things you could run into too. I mean, who can forget your best-selling children's book about the true story of Clarabelle the cow?
Well, thankfully that doesn't happen too often. You don't run into too many cows out there. But that did happen, after a massive flood in 1955. And, yeah, there were a few cows went out to sea, but only one of them made the distance, and that was Clarabelle. But, I mean, what sort of a shock would you get motoring along out at sea and then spotting a cow go past? I mean, that's not what normally happens, is it?
No. Those containers are a real worry too, aren't they? The way they can sometimes sit really just under the water surface, just on the top.
Well, that big container spill, what was that now? 12 months ago? How long ago was that? 6 or 12 months ago? I'm not sure.
About that,
months. Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Well, I think 80 containers went over the side. Now, those containers are massive, very heavy. Some would sink to the bottom. Others can float, as you say, under the surface. But what's happening here in Fingal Bay, my home beach, sadly, and I witnessed it through the week on a couple of occasions, I walk around the beach just for a bit of exercise, and the amount of plastic cups piling up that have ruptured, one of those ruptured containers, and the cups had dribbling out of a container and washing up on the beach. And you can pick up a couple of handfuls every time.
Just
but
terrible.
But really, that's scratching the surface. I also heard, and I don't know whether it's the case, but one of the containers that they haven't found is full of super glue, like, those little super glue containers.
Oh, dear.
You know, and another one, sadly, one of the bays here, we've got a lot of little rocky bays, and one of the bays, I'm told, has quite a lot of tyres in it. So one of the containers had tyres. So, you know, we're
just
trying to look
terrible
after the earth, isn't it? That's just so, so disappointing to know that things like that happen. The sad part about all that, Scott, is that half the containers haven't even been located. So they could still be floating around out there or ready to, and it, you know, who knows when they're going to open up and spew their contents into the ocean. So just because you're out on the water motoring around, you've got to be very, very vigilant because there are so many things that can bring you undone.
Yeah, for sure. And in the estuaries too, I think, you know, we're talking about the sea, but I never forget anchoring up in little billboat Baggins, is my 10-foot boat, and just sitting there in about a foot of water as the current runs over the top of the sandbank, and just relaxing, catching the giant whiting that nose up into the shallows there on live bloodworms, and minding my own business. And this fellow came up the Swansea Channel at 100 miles an hour and in one of those big wake boats, and he thought, oh, there you go, I can go where that bloke is. And I wasn't waving to him to say, g'day, mate. And he hits the sandbank and the weed bed at, 60 kilometres per hour. They all go flying forward and things are flying off. And then he's stuck and he's churning up the bottom and ripping up all the weed beds because he's jammed it right up on the sandbank. And that's the problem. Look at the boat. If there's a little flat-cut punt sitting on that sandbank, it could be in 6 inches of water.
Mm. Yeah, and the same is experienced in all our estuaries. Our estuaries, Scott, and I've just travelled from Eden to Tweed Heads, but I was aware of it before that, but our estuaries are becoming increasingly shallow because of the movement of sand. There is a massive movement of sand in a northern direction following the current, and it's just clogging up all the estuaries, and most of the estuaries it's very, very difficult to leave the estuary and to motor out into the ocean. Here at Port Stephens, we've got probably one of the very best entrances along the entire coastline. But so up inside, right up inside the estuaries, in the river systems and feeder streams, they're all clogging up as well. And particularly if you get further up, where the water becomes rather murky and you can't see whether it's 6 inches deep or 6 feet deep, and people just... And I've seen what you've just described on a few occasions, that everyone zooms along because everyone's in a hurry, and you're thinking, here we go again, and then whack, they'll hit the sandbank, which only could be in less than, 6 inches of water. I've been up into those estuaries, and I've got a flat bottom punt, as you say, and I have a 9-horsepower motor. And at times I've got to tilt that motor to get up the river because the river is so shallow. And others with bigger boats that go a lot faster just go whack. And, there's got to be an accident or bad accident if people just don't slow down and be a bit more sort of aware, alert.
Yeah, well, that's where the Polaroids are great, and put someone on watch at the prow of the boat. That's the go with it, isn't it, Stinker? Are your favourite fish the snapper playing the game at the moment?
Well, it's I've been tormented over the last fortnight. There's two things that stop me from really catching snapper. One is it when it gets too calm, and two, when it gets too rough. So what I have got to get, I've got to get that middle ground where there's about a metre and a half, 2 metre swell. A 2 metre swell is just pretty good. That's what I really do like. A metre and a half, 2 metre. But when it gets under a 2 metre and it gets right down as a 1 metre swell, well, that's pretty much a flat sea. And you struggle to fish in close, the white water, well, because there's no white water. And when the water is crystal clear, it's gin clear and it's just so beautiful, really. Good for snorkeling, but no good for catching snapper in the wash. And then, of course, if it comes up over 2 metres and it starts getting a bit wild and woolly, well, then so what I'm saying is the last fortnight, I haven't had conditions as I was hoping. I've been out a couple of times, nevertheless, and I've caught a few fish, but it's been a bit of a struggle.
Good on you, Stinker. Oh, well, we can always talk about fishing. I'm still getting people talking to me about Sticky Norman and the ferrets. That was a very good story last week.
Oh, the rabbits, yeah. That's a beauty, isn't it?
Good on you, mate.
Okay, see you later, Scott. Hooroo.
See you, Stinker.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
And dark and cold conditions with the winter solstice. We're just getting through that. It's onward and upward from here on in. Things can only get better after the darkest, longest night of the year. And you've got to worry about people who go fishing in the dark sometime. Coming up, Mullet Gut Vic on Fishing the Shallows.
People, what it's all about. You catch a catfish, I'll catch a trout. Fishing in the dark, fishing in the dark. Come on now, baby, we'll go fishing in the dark. Some folks fish in the broad daylight. I'd rather wait till the moon is bright to go fishing in the dark, fishing in the dark. Come on now, baby, we'll go fishing in the dark. Went down to the river just to have some fun. Saw some pretty fish, is gonna get me some. Fishing in the dark, I might take two. Fishing in the dark. Well, come on now, baby, we'll go fishing in the dark. The funny thing about Deacon Brown, never got lucky till the sun went down. Fishing in the dark, fishing in the dark. Come on now, baby, we'll go fishing in the dark. Fish a while. I told my boss, I told him so. I would stop fishing, but I can't say no. Fishing in the dark, fishing in the dark. Come on now, baby, we'll go fishing in the dark. Come on now, baby, we'll go fishing in the dark.
It's the Big Fish and the Big Fish Band. Fishing in the dark, the darkest, longest night of the year, the winter solstice. It's all onward and upward from here. Things can only get better with the fishing, although oftentimes the fish will get right up on the sunny winter's days into the shallows, and it's surprising how shallow the big flathead and other fish can be in the estuaries. You've just got to know where to look.
ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
As we heard with Stinker, our last cast on The Big Fish, shallow water can be a danger in the estuaries, but it's a very productive place to fish. With my dear old dad, Mullet Gut Vic, we always fish in very shallow water. Very exciting watching the big brim and the whiting come up under the boat, and you never know, we've caught crabs, we've caught flathead, we've caught mullet. You catch everything in that very shallow water, and a small boat is just the go. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Scott?
Yeah, you're going well. I do recall a story about my grandfather, though, Dar, fishing in shallow, very shallow water, the shallowest water you could possibly fish in. Is that right?
Yes, I recall that too. It was quite funny, really. Poor old Dar was fishing all night up north in Queensland, around the Bowen area, and he was after whiting and brim, and he couldn't work it out because the night before he'd done pretty well. He caught a few, and he was in the same sort of spot. And he's throwing the line out and not losing a bait. And this went on just about all night. And when dawn broke, he looked out and he'd been fishing on a sandbank. The tide had gone out.
Yeah, you get those big 4 metre tides up there. So he was fishing high and dry.
Yes, he was high and dry and no bites, no fish, probably a few sand crabs, but that's about it.
He used to love that spot, catching the grunter, and there are good whiting there. A lot of people don't know that there are some very good whiting around the mouth of the Burdekin and on the sandy spots. You've got to watch out for the crocodiles these days, but it is good fishing. Love the golden trevally off the wharf there at Bowen too. They're a terrific fish, aren't they?
Yes, I remember my mum, your grandmum, caught a beautiful golden trevally off the wharf up there and had it on for ages and pulled it in and was very proud of that.
They fight and they turn to a beautiful gold when they pass away, actually. They change colour dramatically. They're an amazing fish and quite a good eating fish for the trevally family. The trevally family aren't that much chop, are they? But they are quite a good eating trevally.
Yeah, this was beautiful. I remember it. She was so proud of it. Yep.
Yeah, and well, stunning fish and a big fish too. They fight like the proverbial. But fishing in that shallow water, that's something that I enjoy. You and I do a lot of
together. I think it's the greatest thrill of all fishing. Your light gear, 4-pound line, small lead, whiting hook, live worms, and it's so thrilling because when the whiting, particularly the whiting, the big whiting, get close to the boat, they take off, and with the light gear, they're enormous fun and beautiful to eat.
Yeah, and it's great, and it's wonderful where we fish, which is a recreational fishing haven. One of the spots we fish, you see so many than you fool. They're not stupid, are they?
No, they're not, and they come right up to the boat, and you just salivate looking down, looking at them. We also got some beautiful blackfish there on one occasion. They were schooled up, and in the shallow water, blackfish schooled up give you a lot of fun.
And they're big ones on the sand flats too, aren't they?
They're light coloured too, quite light coloured because of the sand. But they fight. They really fight. And the shallower the water, the better the fun. That's what I always say. My father used to say, always look for the light and black patches of weed when you're fishing on the shallows, in the shallows. And he's dead right.
He would have done a fair bit in the Georges River too, wouldn't he?
Well, mostly Port Hacking. Port Hacking, he fished a lot of that sort of fishing in Port Hacking. Had a rowing boat, used to row miles up to Deer Park and round there. Fish in the shallows, fish in the deep. He was a great fisherman, though.
The fishing in Lake Macquarie, I mean, it's just outstanding, isn't it? It's just amazing how that's kicked on as a recreational fishing haven. What changes have you seen? Have you seen changes for the better?
The big change, Scott, was when they stopped commercial fishing, which was incredibly good for the amateur angler and really a wonderful thing for tourism in this area. I mean, we've fishing, the lake has never fished better. All sorts of species, including a few sharks, I might add, dolphins, you name the fish, and they're in Lake Macquarie. Lots of people don't understand, though, that you've got to pick the right tide, that you've got to pick the right bait, you've got to pick the right gear. Amateurs who just go out there and think they're going to catch a fish 10 minutes after they arrive at a spot are deluding themselves, really. It's a great fishing spot, but you've still got to do all the right things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the shallows are very exciting, I must say, fishing in that sort of environment, although I did have a bit of a disaster. I can talk about it now. I've recovered from it when I had a big 2-pound brim on one rod and the other rod flew out of the boat along with my phone and wallet and keys, so we weren't going to get home if I didn't go after it. So I jumped over, and boy, it runs across those flats. It was only waist deep, but it was running so hard I had to go with it. But I got the fish.
You did. You got the fish, and fortunately a bloke picked you up because I was trying to undo the anchors and go after you. You were going so quickly in the current. Very silly, silly thing to do, young man. Very silly. Don't do that again. No. Don't try that at home, I should say.
It was funny because I handed the rod. I was fighting this fish standing up in chest-deep water, and the fellow came around, a nice bloke, and handed the rod up to him, and I clambered on board. I had my wallet in my teeth. I had the car keys, which were on a float, thank goodness, and jumped up on the deck of the boat, and this bloke's playing this brim. He had one of those $60,000 brim boats with the platform and the seat up the front. We're in the little 10-foot tinny, and we've got a big bucket of fish, and he's playing this brim. He said, gee, this is a good fish. I said, yeah, it's not a bad one. I think it's a pretty big one. Anyway, he finally netted it. And he said, that's the biggest bream I've ever caught.
That's right. He had all the gear. He had a wonderful boat. And I don't think he'd caught a... I don't think he'd ever caught a fish that size. You're right about that.
Had the fish finders and all the gadgetry, but the old live bait and a 10-foot tinny in 2 feet of water, it's a pretty stealthy way to go.
The worst thing about that was we had to go because you got cold, if you remember rightly.
That's right. The fish was still biting. It's rare for us to leave when they're still biting. I think we had enough anyway.
Oh, we had. We had plenty. We had our limit.
That's right. That's right. Had a memorable trip, but yeah, I'll stay in the boat next time. Tight lines. Thanks for joining us on The Big Fish.
Pleasure, Scott. See you soon.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio. If you have a fishy photo for our podcast page or Facebook, or an issue you'd like us to explore, then email thebigfish@your.abc.net.au. And don't forget, you can subscribe for free to The Big Fish podcast on iTunes or through the ABC Listen app.
When fishing last Sunday and I caught a smelt, put him in the pan and the fire he felt. Of all the smells I ever smelt,
well,
I never smelt a smelt like that smelt.
As the salmon swam up the river to spawn,
yeah,
he said to himself with a great big yawn,
ho ho,
the next time I come up this way,
I'm gonna make the trip in a Chevrolet. Ho ho.
We'll be right back. been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.